Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea, the On the Mend Andy Shea. How are we feeling, Andy?
We are alive and kicking, Jimmy. Let's just say that. did you virtually pass me that stomach flu that's going around that you had 2 weeks ago and gave to me last week that I had for New Year's? Happy New Year!
Yes. That was the virtual transfer of the virus. We did it online. And, you know, Andy, after what I went through, man, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I feel so bad for you.
Yeah, be safe out there, folks. Wash your hands. Do what you got to do. The stomach version of this is she's a beast. She is. She's very intense and painful. And yeah, you know what I call it? I call it the colonoscopy prep strain. That's jokingly, I'm like, what's the difference?
Andy, way more detail than our listeners need.
Okay.
Way more. I understand exactly what you're saying, but way more than our listeners need. Let's shift gears, Andy. Let's get to actual Penn State football. And you know what? I know I've talked about this before on the air, and I just want to refresh people's memories. You and I, prior to the show, day before the show, we always get on a call and talk about what we're talking about. So we'd be prepared. No matter how much listeners think we're just winging it, and no matter how much it may appear that we're just winging it, Andy, you and I actually do some prep work. And I will often say, I should hit the record button when we're having that conversation because it's probably more entertaining than the actual show. You and I will sometimes clash on our thoughts, which is great. You know, it's fun that you and I will disagree at times. And yesterday was one of those times. And I actually want to address it. We're going to get into some of the position things, you know, like rate how the positions are doing, the incoming players, the players that are staying. But just in an overview, and I don't think this will surprise anybody, that in our bit of conflict yesterday, I was the one who was a bit more optimistic. You were less so. In fact, I think you used the expression, I was putting the lipstick on the pig. In talking about this entire Penn State situation, where they are. And I wanted to give each of us the opportunity to address why we feel like the way that we do, Andy. So I'm going to give you the floor first and explain why you are much more negative than I was.
Well, let's see. So you're painting me into a corner. I said you're trying to put lipstick on the problem, not on the pig. I think there's a numbers game. A healthy roster game. This is a lot of turnover in the Penn State roster. And that's not necessarily unexpected. You know, through the course of the hiring process, and then when you saw that, you know, the athletic director who could have and should have been fired for cause, he got lucky better than good in finding Matt Campbell and him being available there. I can't get that off my chest enough. Wrecking this recruiting class by not having a coaching staff in place, you just felt there was a numbers game. Do I think when I look at what Penn State's going through and what Matt Campbell's doing, do I think when you look at their top 30 players next year, do I see that as highly problematic? No, I actually don't. I don't think they're going to have a problem putting a competitive product on the field. How competitive and the level of quality, that's always up for interpretation and debate. I'm talking you know, when you go to your next 30 and then your next 15, right? Your second and third and your depth and what are you building? I just think it's a big, it's a monster transition and there's some problems to it. I don't know how you're going to make the math add up, right? Like, I think, you know, will they have scholarships left over? I don't think so, but what are you filling that with? A body or product? So there's a lot of nuance. There's not a lot of nuance. I think Penn State's going to end up with a numbers game. It feels like they could end up on the short end. I think in the interview that I saw that was outstanding, it was a full 30-minute interview. He kind of indicated, you know, 2026, you know, is going to be some scrambling. And I think Penn State will be in scramble mode for a while. Do I think he's doing a terrible job at filling the roster in the portal so far? No, I don't. I think he's got more assets than he's ever had, and he's figuring out how to use them. But I still think, looking at this big picture, there's a numbers game that I think could be problematic for this roster in 2026. And kind of possibly maybe an outside chance in 27, but I just think they're going to have a numbers fight on their hands next year.
Well, let's start right there with the math. I know we often say it was my understanding that be no math, but we're going to throw math out there anyway, Andy. So far, what you have on the team are 28 players who have stated that they're staying, 28, 29, 30, somewhere in that ballpark. Let's go with 28. Approximately 10 who have not announced what they're doing yet. The hope is that the majority of them are staying. Just the fact that they didn't go out to social media to say they're staying, but you still might get some attrition there. We know that. There are 23 incoming transfers so far, the vast majority of which are coming from Iowa State. And there are 12 incoming recruits. Here's the arithmetic, Andy. I won't test you. I got it. It puts them at a total of 73 players. And that's far from – there are no minimums as far as scholarship players. It used to be 85. Now I think it's 105. But I think most teams are closer to 85 than they are to 105.
Correct.
So at the bare minimum, you got to think there's more coming. There are more incoming transfers. There has to be. And there are plenty of holes that need to be shored up, plenty of positions that need to be shored up. But let me give my reason for some enthusiasm is this model. I hear a lot of the criticism is, gee, you're bringing in about 20 Iowa State players, an 8-4 Big 12 team, and that's where you're getting a good number of your players from. Well, it's also you're cherry-picking the best of the players. There's approximately 50 Iowa State players that were in the portal. A couple good players have gone elsewhere, so you know, full disclosure. But Matt Campbell knows that roster better than anybody else in the world, and he's chosen these 20 to bring them in. Among the Penn State players staying, there's also a whole bunch of players. This is not, you know, just plain Iowa State East, which is what I've seen a lot of people reference it as. Out of the 28 Penn State players that are staying, there's a lot of really good players. Players like Darius Dixon, Tony Rojas, Andrew Rapelier, Anthony Donka, Cooper Cousins, Quentin Martin. There are some really good Penn State players that are staying. The other part to this, Andy, in the number of approximately 43 Penn State players that have left, first of all, don't get me wrong. There are several players that I wish could have remained on the roster. And you and I could identify, you know, players like Chaz Coleman, King Mack, Luke Reynolds. would love to have them stay. But a lot of this, Andy, is clearing out dead wood also. The players that, you know, Matt Campbell and his staff has decided, you know what? You know, they're not worth what they think they are. We could easily replace them in the portal. So they are making that changeover also, Andy. So I think there are a lot of reasons for enthusiasm for this team.
Really?
I do.
Okay. Well, you're allowed to see that. I see more yellow flags than green flags. I think it all feels to me like about half. Like, I think the players that are staying, I think you've got about 8 quality Big Ten football players. Okay, so he gets to cherry pick the players he thinks are the best ones from an 8-4 Big 12 Iowa State team. He's feeling that's which players do I want and which players do we need? And, you know, you go under the, you know, 80-20 rule. 80% of them are going to contribute, 20% aren't. All right, you pick up another, you know, 8 to 10 contributors. Looking at it from a 30 deep, right? I go 30 deep to look at your regular rotation. So I think they've got about 60 to 70% of what they need set, right? Like, going into spring ball, I think they're at like 60, 70%. I don't know. Is that a good spot? This team was always going to lose an immense amount of talent anyway, right?
Yes.
It was always going to lose it. There was they spent a ton of NIL money on roster retention last offseason when they built, you know, the 8-cylinder that was supposed to be college football championship competitive. That was all going to go anyway. So they were always going to take a very large torpedo to the side of their hull, right? That was always going to be imminent. So that stacked up with for Matt and the coaching change, that sort of doubles down on, you know, the numbers game and the difficulty. There is reason for optimism. I mean, I know we're going to talk about it coming up. Let's not start it in this quarter, but I'm just going to mention the quarterback position, right? I think he swings and hit a home run at that position. Yes, the Penn State guy is leaving, but there's so much upside to what he's got going on.
All right, Andy, that's the final word in Q1. We will start with the quarterback position when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2 of our show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. Andy, in quarter 1, we did the 3,000-foot view, overlook the whole system, what's going on at Penn State. Now, let's get into things a little more specific, a little bit more by position. You wrapped up quarter number 1 teasing the quarterback position, and this was always an interesting conversation leading up to the portal happening with the official announcements. It was, I think, most of the Penn State fan base really liked what they were seeing from Ethan Grunkmeyer, especially over the last several games. But what was always looming was Rocco Beck from Iowa State, a veteran with 1 year of eligibility left, had announced that he was going to be hitting the portal. The question was, would he or would he not be coming to Penn State? That Matt Campbell probably had a decision to make. Was it Rocco Beck or Ethan Grunkmeyer? He most likely couldn't have them both, and he was going to have to make a decision. The fact that he ended up with Rocco Beck, how do you react to that?
That was his preference. I think he made the right decision. I actually think Penn State upgraded greatly at the quarterback position with Rocco over Ethan. Don't get me wrong. Ethan performed admirably well. He kept getting a little bit better. Don't forget Jimmy. He had a lot around him. Now, I'm not saying that that's a credit to him. He actually took advantage of the weapons around him. Like, he had both tight ends, right? Raplia and Reynolds. He had, you know, the two running backs, veteran, experienced offensive line that actually started playing, like, you know, up to expectations. And if you think about it, the wide receivers, they weren't great, but were they bad, Jimmy? I don't think so. They weren't abjectly problematic. They weren't great, or, you know, they didn't, like, elevate the position to the next, to another level, but they certainly did not regress or make it, you know, part of the problem. So I just, you know, I look at it all and I think, man, a 3-year starter with, you know, that much moxie, knows the offense, can fit the transition, wants to come here. The one thing about Rocco that kind of always, I mean, Ethan, that always sort of, he didn't win the job. He earned the quarterback two, he won the quarterback two job. Injury made him a starter. Rocco had won a job. I had said that before, but Ethan just, he always struck me as, he's a really good quarterback. That's it. I don't know that he had some of that sort of maybe next level it factor. And I think Rocco just felt like he had a little bit more of it in my book. So I think he upgraded greatly at the quarterback position. End of story. My opinion.
I'm not sure about greatly. And I actually feel like I give Ethan Grunkmeyer probably more credit than you do. But I thought the advantage of Grunkmeyer over Rocco Beck was Ethan Grunkmeyer had 3 years of eligibility remaining. Rocco Beck has one. However, I don't think this is an Ethan Grunkmeyer versus Rocco Beck comparison. It's Ethan Grunkmeyer versus Rocco Beck and Alex Lansk, who was the freshman quarterback at Iowa State. Highly regarded, and the fact that Matt Campbell brought him in means that he thinks highly of him. So he actually, I think he redshirted, so I think he has 4 years of eligibility left, Andy, and he was willing to sit for another year behind Rocco Beck. So I think what you have now is the combo of those two quarterbacks versus Ethan Grunkmeyer. I think it was a great decision. The way Matt Campbell went, he brought in his two quarterbacks that he was comfortable with. You do get the guy who is experienced and probably was going to be the better candidate for the 26th season.
Agreed.
The experience, the relationship with the coaching staff. And, Andy, I'll go to the next phase of our discussion. Let's talk about some of the skill position players being brought in. Wide receiver, pretty much those three transfer players that came into Penn State last year at wide receiver are all out the door. You had to rebuild there, okay? It wasn't just patching. And he brought in the three receivers from Iowa State, including Chase Soule, who appears to be a really good player. This Eskelson, can't say Eskelson, and Brookins, the freshman, and he was able to retain Kobe Howard. So at the very least, it's a push at wide receiver, and they probably upgraded the position there, Andy.
It's not a high bar, Jimmy. The expectations at that position in terms of Penn State's roster and its recent performance the last 3 to 4 years, I would even say. Certainly the last three seasons, for sure. I do think 25 was remarkably better than 24 or 23, for sure. But I still say overall, it is a substandard, competitive college football playoff level position on Penn State's roster. It's a black hole on the roster. It's the lowest expectation. It's the lowest performing position. The bar is really low at Penn State at the wide receiver position for where a new group of receivers could take it, because the group in 25 only moved the bar one step forward, one small step forward. And that was good enough. That was more than good enough. In my opinion, this group could be that, but the bar is really low. So,
Well, I think, Andy, this is also where that Rocco Beck familiarity, not just with the offense, but with the receivers who also have the familiarity with the offense. I think this helps Rocco Beck also. He's stepping in with three wide receivers that he's very familiar with and are familiar with the offense. The tight end position, I think, is another interesting one, Andy. This was loaded at Penn State, absolutely loaded, and they lost so much talent, including, you know, Luke Reynolds. You and I, when talking a couple weeks ago about players that you want to have stick around, you did a slash, you know, Andrew Rapoyer slash Luke Reynolds. Well, they got one of
my number two. My number one was Andrew Rapoyer. Yeah. Who do you want to keep?
And they did get to keep Andrew Rapoyer, which is great. And they also brought in, you know, a pair of tight ends who were really good at Iowa State in Brett Brommer and Gabe Burkle. So I think in the veteran guys, again, familiar with the offense, I think once again, and I think Penn State fans will be very happy with this, we're going to see more, you know, multi-tight end formations, and I think they have, again, at Penn State, they have the talent at tight end to do it.
I think on the offensive side of the ball, and the tight end kind of, I think on the offensive side of the ball is where you're going to see a little bit more of Iowa State East when you're talking about this team. You're going to see it at the quarterback position. You're going to see it at the wide receiver position. You're going to see there's usage there at the tight end position. Running back, open season at the running back position. But I think that's where you're going to see it. But I think the quarterback position soars to the reason I said he got it so right, I think it soars to a value prop position.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the specialty people are Iowa State people. At running back, Andy, I want to hit that quickly. I think they're in pretty good shape with Quentin Martin returning. I think we saw what he could do with his effort in the Pinstripe Bowl. But they added, you know, Carson Hansen from Iowa State. This is a guy who had 950 rushing yards, averaged over 5 yards a carry. And James Peeple from Ohio State, who was very highly regarded coming in. You know how competitive the Ohio State, you know, running back room is. So that's another guy with a lot. I think Hanson, Peoples, Martin, not to mention Tyke Hayes also returning. I think they're in pretty good shape at running back.
Yeah, don't disregard Tyke Hayes. I think Penn State already, the running back room was so developed there, even with the two guys leaving, they already, and both guys that were behind them are staying. That could be a position of strength for this RPO offense. For sure. Absolutely. 100%.
Andy, now this is where I get a little less positive. Offensive line, because this is where you need five guys there minimum. You hope for even more. Cooper Cousins coming back, Anthony Donka coming back, I think is a good start. Is, you know, Chimney Ono, Owen Alessini, Caleb Brewer, could one or two of these young guys. I think Dominic Rooley coming back. Andy, just such a veteran guy who, if need be, like he stepped right in at center during the Pinstripe Bowl, acquitted himself pretty well. I think just having that kind of veteran presence is also helpful. They only brought in one guy so far, Trevor Burr from Iowa State, who's an interior offensive lineman. I'd like to see them beef up this offensive line yet in the portal.
Well, they're going to shop there because they're going to need – they're going to – this is the numbers game that they're losing. And Matt knows it. I think they've got three starting offensive linemen, right? You need six or seven, and you want to go 10 deep. And they're short. And they are going to – you've got some young guys that stayed around. Can they develop, et cetera, et cetera? Don't forget, you're going to have to fill – let's just go six and say your rotation of your offensive lineman is your five starters and your first man up. That's your starting lineup. So they're halfway home just to their starting lineup. They'll find a solution, but then you need your next five, right? You need your get you to 10 and 11. So I think that's where the numbers game is going to play. I think it is. To me, it is either number one or number two on the position shopping list or on the roster build-out for Matt and his staff. They know that they've got some Lego work they need to do on the offensive line, whether that's through the transfer portal, whether it's late recruiting, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. When we come back, let's ask Andy with your questions. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means it's time for your questions, and we're going to ask Andy. Get the app. You'll see the Ask Andy button. Send in your questions, and away we will go. Here we go, Andy. Let's start with our good friend Brad from Perkasie, who says, would the national championship game be better if it was on the Saturday, the weekend before the Super Bowl? Also, with a lot of teams losing who got a bye, should we switch to a 16-team playoff? Just a quick note on that last question about – over the 2 years, four teams get a bye each year. That's eight teams.
Right.
The top-seeded teams, they are 1-7, Andy.
1-7.
Now, last year, there was that funny seeding, so the group of five team a couple teams still got byes that shouldn't, but still that would make that group 1-5 instead of 1-7.
Correct.
So
it's still
answer these in any order you like.
It's still unusual. I think a 16-team playoff is just around the corner from the light of day, Jimmy. I think it's coming. It's coming down the track. It is. In terms of moving it to before the Super Bowl, that is the dead weekend, right? Like it's the occasionally the NFL. I think once or twice in the past 20 years, they've short scheduled it for some reason, but I don't think they're ever going to do that again under the 18-game expansion schedule. So that's always an open weekend. I mean, we're already into what, the 19th is the championship game this year. Why not? Right? Like you're already into past mid-January. Why not? So I think before they can do that, when they expand to 16, they have to fix the transfer portal open date, right, in terms of the college football playoff teams. Because if you're going to back that schedule up further, and by back it up, I mean extend it out further, then your first few days of January opening the transfer portal affects even more teams and more players who are involved in the college football. So they have to fix that little nuance and either move it after or make it closer to the end when less teams are playing and there's more, and make it available and an equal footing for more players before you go that late. But I don't see a problem with it, Brad, going to that weekend. Why not? I mean, look, they had you and me and hello. I don't care when they're playing it. We're watching.
Andy, I think it's, you know, a great idea that we, first of all, I think it's a god awful idea that the NFL waits 2 weeks for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Just play the following week. Come on. Then, I love then if there is that open week. The problem with it is it's pushing it out too far for college football. Andy, I look for college football to go the other way and stop having all of this big. They try so hard to accommodate those bowl games. Forget that. They don't owe the bowl games anything, Andy. Do the schedule. Move it forward. Get it done quicker with the college football bowl games. You know, maybe have the semifinals over, New Year's, you know, where it was traditionally the big bowl games, and maybe just extend one more week. I'd like to see them get the college football playoffs done earlier, not later. You brought up a good point, the transfer portal window.
Yeah,
it's such a tough conflict there.
Yeah, fix it.
Our colleague, Mike Villagrana, he suggested pushing it back to the end of the school year, like back to the spring. And then, yes, there's what happens to spring practice. Well, how about doing it in the summer, allow those couple weeks of practice after the portal gets done? But then you don't have any of this conflict like you do now. You have Indiana, you know, and they're doing a great job in the transfer portal, Andy, but they're also trying to prepare for playoff games. So, yeah, I would like to see them fix that also. All right, Andy, next one. Short and sweet, Chris from New York. Andy, is this just pro football by another name?
Ooh.
Simple answer is yes.
I blurted out no, but I'm not sure why now. Yes, it is. It's free agency. There was always a lot of money, but it wasn't equally balanced. Now that the player share's coming in, you know, some of my old school friends are like, they're ruining college football because of the money. And I'm like, do you realize before NIL became a thing that there was still probably, you know, 75% of the money you're talking about today was already there. So it was already well funded and lucrative prior to. It's just the balance of power is, well, they get a scholarship and they get an education. And I'm like, okay, dinosaur, let's talk about something else. But yeah, it is. It really is. CEOs, head coaches are CEOs more than anything. We've talked about that. So all the elements are there. The stakes are higher. The money, the television revenue just continues to expand. I mean, it's growing every 2 years, not every contract. It's expanding on the fly.
Andy, I agree with you completely. Would my preference be there wasn't this huge money in it? Yes. Where then, you know, you'd see players sticking with the same teams, the same programs, the same school. But you're right. There was so much money in it before, but the players got none of the money. You had coaches and administrators and conference officials. They were getting all the money. I really like that even less. So I would rather see the players get some of the money. This craziness, well, that's just part you have to live with. All right, let's go to Steve in Columbia, who says, I keep hearing you have to get players that know the system. What is the system? I never played a down of football in my life, but most teams pretty much look the same. This ain't rocket science or brain surgery. Seems like people want to justify exorbitant salaries to coach, play, and work in TV to overanalyze a game. Football is running, passing, blocking, tackling, kicking. Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid. Those that do that the best win. See Indiana. Those that don't lose. As Jim noted in an earlier podcast, the teams in the playoffs have a very high percentage of transfers. I guess they knew the system. Steve, where's the question?
Right. I think the blocking, tackling, you know, et cetera, running, passing. Yeah, it's still, that's all, keep it simple. But it's the, how do you get there? How do you get to that? What is your focus? What is your scheme? What is your identity? All of that matters greatly. The playbooks, right? Like, look, Penn State's defense has changed. Look at the change in their defense from one coordinator to another. A lot of the same players, right? That defense was nowhere near the defense it was the year before. And they fired the defensive coordinator.
And I think the I think Steve is trying to indicate, you know, it's like with all the Iowa State players coming in and the argument, oh, they know the system. And then he gives Indiana as an example of you don't need to know the system. Well, guess what? At Indiana, he brought all his players from James Madison who knew the system. So, you know, I think, Steve, you're using the wrong example there. And I there's something to be said for the familiarity of the system. Absolutely. Also, there's something to be said for give me the best players. All right.
Right. Give me the good one.
Let me go to Jeremy in Newark, Delaware. Did you know it was pronounced differently in Delaware than in New Jersey?
I did not. I know it's Newark in New Jersey.
It's Newark in New Jersey. It's Newark in Delaware. Was James Franklin the best coach available in this cycle? And while we're getting a version of Iowa State football here in State College, is James Franklin just taking Penn State football to Blacksburg?
Yes, to the second one. He will bring his system, his marketing, his, you know, branding, his focus, his, you know, sort of his tone, tenor, heartbeat. That all arrives in Blacksburg. Was he the best coach? Not even close. He's a very good CEO, but is he the best football coach? In my opinion, not even close. I think Penn State got one of the three best, maybe four best, proven head coaches I'm looking at. And I'm not sure I put Lane Kiffin among those three. I'm just really good coach, but, you know, he's won the Gator Bowl. Okay. You know, his team's still in the college football playoffs. Well, yeah, but he abandoned them. So who's the answer? Kyle Whittingham, Michigan. I think they got the best football coach.
I think, how
about that answer?
I'm thinking, because I'm thinking I agree with you.
Hold on, I don't want to agree with that guy.
Yeah, that's what makes me hesitate, Andy.
I saw it.
The analogy between, you know, Michigan and Penn State, they both struggled in finding their coach. In the end, fortuitous, good luck, I think they both ended up getting a very good coach for their program, you know, and the question for both of them is they both overachieved in programs at Utah and Iowa State. Can they do it with the big names? Yes, they're going to have more resources, but it may be a bit different coaching 4 and 5 stars than 3 stars. You know, there's different attitudes. There's prima donnas. There's guys looking for the big payday more so. So, you know, we'll see how they make out in the transition. With that said, I think Virginia Tech made as good a hire as anybody did, because they got one of the top names in coaching to a school that's not considered one of those top schools, top blue blood programs. Was it right, though, for Penn State and James Franklin to part ways? Yes. It was, you know, a good marriage for several years, but it reached that point where they wake up next to each other and they roll over and go, yeah, I'm ready to move on. Both sides were, Andy. All right, that's it for Ask Andy. Stick around. We're going to look at the Penn State defense when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State football. Going through this crazy, crazy new coach, transfer portal, NIL, everything else going on with it, Andy. Quarter number two, we kind of looked at, We looked at the offense, looked at the depth chart. I think we both agree they're in fairly good shape. That offensive line, though, would like to see more depth there.
Right.
I'm going to start, Andy, on the defense with probably the problematic area. Again, the line of scrimmage, I think we're, you know, maybe at defensive end, some, you know, this Max Granville coming back after injury, Kamaju coming back. I know a lot of people like this transfer in from Colorado, this Alex McPherson. But at defensive tackle, Andy, I'm not sure, are we?
Right, up the middle. Yeah, up the middle is problematic. I think when you so the defensive side of the ball is a little bit more of the it'll be more of a from the ground up. It'll be a lot of the defense will be starting over. There's an opportunity. There'll be a new sort of likeness and image of this defense and what kind of players you're looking for. But I look it up the middle, you know, sort of the. They lost some guys because of, you know, NFL and they're moving on. But they also lost a couple guys in the transfer portal. So the safety position, I'm starting there, right? That becomes a hole, right? That a position of strength that was as deep as deep could get the last three seasons, right? And you know, NFL draft pick after NFL draft pick. Up the middle, middle linebacker, right? I know Tony Rojas is coming back, but that's not a middle linebacker. I know they run a two linebacker system up the middle. Defensive tackle up the middle. So I think on the edges, you've got a little bit of, you know, you got a little bit of ingredients there for your chicken salad that I think is capable and actually enticing up the middle, straight down the lane, three lane highway, straight down the middle, problematic, a lot of work to do. Bodies development, both angles across the yard. The defense up the middle really is troublesome for me.
Well, they brought in some defensive tackles. They brought in a guy from Oklahoma State. They brought in this Keanu Williams, 6'5", 320 pounds from UCLA. You know, a player who played for Danton Lynn and played for this new defensive line coach. Again, 6'5", 320. You know, I think they're hoping he's plug and play. Liam Andrews, Ty Blanding, you know, coming back. But, and who did I miss? Well, they brought in a player from Iowa State also, one player, but a youngster, a sophomore eligibility. So, Andy, yeah, this is a place. There's still plenty of scholarships available.
They're going to cast a wide berth on the defensive side of the ball. That's my feeling. They're going to.
Well, Andy, sticking with, you know, with the line first, we'll get to linebacker, but let, you know, at defensive tackle, boy, I think they've got to shore it up. They've got a best to even get a couple players there yet that are plug and play.
Going to a single position, I feel the defensive tackle is the you call it the black hole, the most problematic, the biggest area of concern. Call it what you want. That is it for me. It's the middle of the entire defense, as I just expressed. But okay, well, which one of those three is it? You know, it's defensive tackle. You got to start up front, right? Like, start there. That is position A for, you know, Lynn to sort of, you know, he's got to build the whole thing, but it's got to start there for him. And he knows it. He knows it. Look at the wide berth he's casting at that position, Jimmy.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the thing to remember here. You can't judge this defensive line like we're doing right now, Andy.
No, but it's I agree with you. It's tough. It's a tough one, but at first glance, it's like it's less known commodity, right?
It still needs to be addressed.
Needs addressed.
If it's not addressed, if they go into spring practice, meaning this, that means that's what they're going into the fall with, Andy, then it's a problem. It's an issue. They've got it. Now it's still something they can address. They can fix it. I think we both agree they need to fix it. They need to do something about it. I'm probably not as concerned at linebacker as you are. I think having Tony Rojas back was huge. I think Alex Tash, who began to show something at the end of last year, is important. I like this Caleb Bacon coming in from Iowa State. So I think there's the folks there. Might they need, you know, another body or two? Yeah, but I think that they're in a pretty good starting point.
I think, well, the linebacker play in 25 was marginal at best, right? And Rojas getting injured did not help.
That's probably their best linebacker being hurt does not help.
Yeah, I think the linebacker is a mixed bag. It's it has a little more upside and potential. I don't see it going into spring practice as a, you know, surefire, you know, yellow flag area. I don't see it as problematic. And I think they can find what they do. I wonder if, you know, Lynn's going to be, is he a, you know, he was a very mixed bag in terms of, you know, he wasn't a sort of straight 4-2-5 guy. He likes to mix and match. And I think you're going to see that at Penn State. I think he's a very good mix and matcher, which is not easy. He doesn't go base and stay and build everything off of that. He'll mix and match you with players instead of formations. Big difference between him and Jim.
Well, and I think, again, in the portal, you know, when we mentioned defensive tackle, there was one player from Iowa State. At linebacker, he brought in three Iowa State players, which tells you he liked his linebacker group there to bring them over. You added Tony Rojas, Alex Tash to that. And, you know, are we going to see, again, the same question we said, you know, on the offensive line. Is there a young player, you know, is LeVar Arrington ready to step up and play? Now, he's one of the unannounced players, but
he's one of the 10.
Yeah, one of the 10. So you never know what's going on. One area where I think they're in really nice shape, Andy, is at cornerback.
They're in great shape at cornerback.
Darius Dixon coming back, Jameer Joseph coming back, David Collins coming back, and even Zion Tracy coming back. It's veteran. It's guys who had been there. It's Terry Smith returning to coach that group.
That's where I was going to go, Jimmy. If Terry kept his position group intact, and cornerback will clearly be a strength of this defense. I still think, you know, we don't know it. We don't know if Poindexter's staying or going, right?
No, he's gone. He's gone.
Okay, I must have missed that. I'm sorry. I was sick. I was literally in bed for 4 days. I'm sorry. I missed it, but I think the secondary, you kind of lost what you know at safety, but can cover up for it a corner. I feel the secondary will be competitive, starting with the corners, because I think even though they lost AJ Harris, big loss, big loss, NFL player talent, big loss. But sometimes it's addition by subtraction, right? So I feel they're with what they have, even despite a big loss. I wouldn't look at their corners and say, hey, that's a corner group I want to throw my offense up against.
Yeah, I think they're fine there. Safety, you know, they're redoing it. They brought in a couple guys from Iowa State, a couple good players. Marcus Neal. Andy, this is a guy with 77 tackles and 11 tackles for loss last year.
Sneaky, the most undervalued and the best player they got beyond the quarterback from Iowa State, I think is him. I 100% agree with you. That's funny you brought him up.
So, you know, I think that's, you know, a difference maker. They also brought in another kid from Iowa State, Vebu Torrey, they have returning. Could probably use another body or two there, Andy. It's not quite where cornerback is, but I think they're in decent shape. One of the other things, and I'm not the first one to say this, Andy, but I will point it out also, bringing back Ryan Barker as your field goal kicker, I think matters.
Oh, it absolutely matters. He's just quietly, you know, been a guy that makes pretty much every kick. What is he? He's a good kicker. That's all you need to know. He seems reliable, comfortable, confident. He's not like the 54-yard, 58-yard flashy guy. Does he look like an NFL kicker by the standards today? No. Could he have made the one in Pittsburgh for the Ravens? Probably. But let's just go beyond that and say, you know, having a kicker, you know, makes a difference.
Just real quick, Andy, I don't know if you saw this graphic. It was funny. It showed a snapshot of that play. Had the uprights, and had between the uprights, it says Mike Tomlin fired. To the left, to the right, Harbaugh fired. Okay, so essentially it was whichever way that kick went, somebody was going to lose their job based on what the kicker did. So, Andy, just overall, I think, you know, we started this show with you and I, maybe I was instigating a little bit. You and I were coming at things from different angles. But I think in going over this position by position, I think we're both looking at it similarly. There is some depth issues, a couple places. I think line of scrimmage, Andy, offensive line, defensive line.
Where it starts. That's where they have the most heavy lifting to do. Across it, and I'm talking in your top 30, right? Your identified top 30. 30, 31, 32, go 33 if you want to keep it like that football number. What's your 30? Line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, most heavy lifting.
All right, Andy, that's the final word. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you for tuning in. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.